You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode 115 for February 2nd, 2011.
Everybody, this is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I am George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a website created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And George, we are partners on this website.
We are. Yeah.
Business
we,
partners.
One might call us sidekicks.
Well, I don't know, because I think we're joint owners in this lucrative venture.
I'm clearly the Batman and you're clearly the Robin, sir.
Well, I mean, I must have misplaced my green Speedo because I don't feel like a sidekick, but maybe I'll have something to say about it since we're talking about sidekicks this week.
Yes, we are.
This week we are going off an article we found on The Escapist called "Hey, Listen, I Like Navi." It's written by Brendan Main.
And he's probably the only person in the world who actually likes Navi, the fairy creature from the Zelda series.
Yeah, well, maybe not the only person. I guess we'll see once we get into it. But, I mean, he uses Navi as a jumping-off point to talk a little bit about sidekicks and to talk a little bit about her specifically as to why he thinks she succeeds as a sidekick. So,
yeah, and is a valuable character.
Yeah, exactly. Not just a, you know, not just a part of the dialogue or whatever, but is a valuable part of the game. Were you moved by what he said?
No, not at all. Are you serious? I'm shocked. We've talked about this before, I think. I absolutely hate her. What? Mm-hmm. No, why would anyone like Navi? She's completely annoying.
And is that because, well, I mean, he goes into that pretty explicitly. Like, he mentions that she's, at least anecdotally, she seems like one of the most grating, or at least one of the characters people complain about the most.
Oh, yeah, she's up there with Slippy from Star Fox.
Which he also mentions. But I think there's a distinction that we could draw between Navi and Slippy. But go into why you had such a reaction to this helpful creature.
Well, so that's the thing, right? Brendan mentions that Navi she's very helpful. She's always saying what you can do, what you can't do. She speaks for Link, right? She's his voice because Link is a completely mute character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that itself is one of the reasons that she irks me so much. It just reminds me how shallow Link is in terms of his interaction with the world, you know?
Mm.
Like, she's helpful in the way that a big red glowing sign is helpful, you know? She's the embodiment of the designer telling you all of these necessary things or behaving in these necessary ways where they fail to do in other regards.
Mm, because, Link is just a cipher or whatever. He needs an interpreter, basically, at all times.
Yeah, okay, so that's the question, right? If Link is a strong character who's also mute, then why have Navi at all speak for him?
Mm.
And if he needs to be spoken for, then why not just give him his own voice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I understand that argument, especially as the years go on, the silent protagonist starts to, seem stranger and stranger. I mean, who are the big holdouts these days? Link and Gordon Freeman? I mean, are there any others that are, that are large game, marquee games that still do voiceless protagonists?
That's all I can think of.
And it probably wasn't as egregious back when Navi was first introduced for Ocarina of Time, but I can definitely see how, especially in comparison to other action RPGs that are now starting to lean towards dialogue, that having a sidekick do all the dialogue for you might feel a little bit limiting.
Especially when we have such potentially great voice actors as Justin Bieber to play Link.
See, that's why I never am that bothered by it.
Because you just think anyone else would have been terrible, or what?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I mean, so much of voice acting is culturally specific. Mm-hmm. And I think Japanese games in general, the localization tends to be really rough. And this is a problem that happens in anime. This is a problem that happens in movies. It's rough dubbing stuff over that hasn't been written in its native language.
Yeah.
And, you know, I shudder to think at, you know, you're right, like the Bieber treatment that they would give, that they would give Link.
At this point, it's the elephant in the room, right? We cannot make Link speak anymore because now it's just too awkward. It's too weird.
You can't ask him his name because you've already known him for like a month.
Yeah, it's very much like that. If he were to speak now, everyone would come out and criticize him because they've already made a voice for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that voice isn't Navi.
But I mean, so the problem is really that you just don't like her. I mean, is it? And as a sidekick, she falls into some of the traps that Brendan went over. I mean, repetitive dialogue, I'm assuming, is one of the things that starts grating.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one of my biggest problems with Navi is that she functions as this obviously designer-created, you know, kind of a jarring character from out of the world to change, not to change things, but to make things easier for the player, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, they're there because they haven't done X, Y, and Z,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, if I've got a sidekick whose sole task is to remind me to hit B when I have to hit B... That's not, you know, that's not what a sidekick does. Kato doesn't do that to the Green Hornet. That's not, you know.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as how it works in a game, I mean, there are plenty of games out there that just ask you to suspend disbelief. I mean, Navi will turn yellow or turn red when there's something dangerous around, whereas a button prompt that you're just kind of supposed to ignore as part of the user interface in another game, like, I don't know, any game, Metal Gear or Assassin's Creed or anything, it's just supposed to be tacitly acknowledged but also ignored by the player rather than being like a diegetic sidekick or whatever you want to call it.
That's true. I mean, there's a layer of fiction on top of Navi that I think I can swallow for the most part during actual gameplay. It's usually just when she's talking that she gets on my nerves.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's even in Ocarina of Time or even in Wind Waker, there's some compelling story that ties her into the game.
Well, not in Wind Waker because she doesn't really exist, but I mean, in Majora's Mask and...
that's right, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, in Majora's Mask is an interesting case because it's not Navi. It's a different fairy, which makes it more meaningful to me anyway because the story of Majora's Mask is Link looking for Navi and then getting lost along the way.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the fairy in Majora's Mask, Tattle, has a much different personality than Navi, like how she talks to Link and how she describes the world to him. She's much more sarcastic and kind of biting, whereas Navi's trying to be helpful and caring all the time. And so she kind of gets retroactively a bit deeper if you play that second game.
Yeah. Well, let's move on and talk about... talk about sidekicks in general case. In what ways does Navi embody what you would imagine to be a good, perfect sidekick? Because I know when I think of a sidekick, I think of, you know, I think of Batman and Robin. I think of the Green Hornet and Kato. I think of, what's the
Tenacious Western? D and Kyle Gass.
Exactly, Tenacious D. That's a good one.
Jack Black and Kyle.
You know, it's someone who, they're always, in some ways, in service to the lead.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of ways have their own arc, have their own struggles. You know, they come to help you in a clinch, but they're also capable of doing things without you.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the best sidekicks.
Beyond Navi that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, Navi doesn't actually physically interact with the world very often.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's always a sense that she's not on par with Link. You know, they're not equals in any way. And I feel like...
I mean, isn't that what a sidekick is, though?
I don't know, maybe. What do you think?
Well, I mean, they would call them partners or something. I think there's implicit in just having that setup as a sidekick that there are things that the sidekick won't do. I mean, even, you know, we were joking around about Batman and Robin, but, I mean, Robin's abilities are not that of Batman.
That's true, but when Batman is in a clinch, Robin will come and be that savior. You know what I mean? And you need to be capable of accomplishing something as Robin.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a support role. I mean, you know, I guess as the years go on, he becomes more and more competent.
I guess what I'm saying is I feel like a sidekick feels to me like an extension of the lead in mm-hmm. some ways.
Hmm. Well, how about then the example that we always use, one of our favorite examples, Prince of Persia, the 2008 remake.
Elika, that's right.
Farrah's interesting. I guess we'll have to come back, huh?
So Elika is I think she's a great sidekick. I mean, especially small spoiler alert for Prince of Persia, the scene in which you have to jump off of the ledge in order to figure out which one she is. That's a mm-hmm. really great scene, and you're putting everything that you have into her hands. That's a perfect example of relying on your sidekick, even though you're the lead, right?
Mm-hmm. And especially because it's not too divorced. I mean, there's no babysitting of her, right? I mean, you're kind of controlling a pair of characters throughout that game, which I think is a pretty rare thing as far as having a non-player character and a main player character in a game.
Yeah, like Elika is the antithesis of what Yorda is in Ico, right? Mm-hmm. Who's not a sidekick, but a piece of luggage that you carry around for most of the game.
she's a lovely glowing piece of luggage, but it would sure be nice if she had some wheels.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at one point in the game when she actually seems to be a bit more powerful and helps you out, maybe you could say narratively she functioned as a sidekick at that point, but certainly not within the game itself.
I mean, that's a good thing to bring up, because it's not just as in films or movies or something. I mean, there has to be some kind of tangible function for the sidekick to perform that either the player feels like the sidekick is performing or they are directly performing.
Well, so what about Farrah that we were just mentioning? In some situations, she's there with you, right? She shoots her arrows. Mm-hmm. She opens gates for you on occasion. But most mm-hmm. of the time, you have to protect her.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I played through Prince of Persia not too long ago, and there were some scenes where all of a sudden a sand monster or whatever would disintegrate behind me, and I'd realize it's because she had shot that sand monster. But I'm not sure if that was just luck and she was scripted to shoot in a certain direction and I just happened to be battling in front of her.
Yeah.
Not as dynamic as other games that I've played.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit different though, because they're not explicitly a team all the time. Like there's some give and take, there's some tension because she's, you know, he doesn't want to let her know that he has the dagger and she's not, you know, completely trusting in him the whole time. It's more of a, you know, obviously it's like a romantic lead, two romantic leads type situation.
Okay, so what about people who serve a sort of functional role like Farrah does, but is not, they're not always there for you, they're not always interacting in the same way? Someone like Elena Fisher from Uncharted 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are scenes in which she'll go about the level while you're scaling something and help you out in some bizarre way, or I don't know. What's another good example?
Well, I mean, with the Uncharted example, I think the scripted dynamics of having sidekicks, you know, Drake is always either working with Sully or you know, with any one of a number of characters. There's actually quite a bit of like multi-character scene stuff that goes on in those games. And you're right. Like when they're solving a puzzle together, you get that feel of, you know, Drake's clearly leading the show, but he has all these other people that are helping him.
Yeah, like the supporting cast in a very supportive way, the way a sidekick might function.
Yeah.
Or Alex Vance.
And you gotta love Sully. I mean, Sully's awesome.
Yeah, Sully's great. But Alex Vance is another example too, right, from the Half-Life series. She's great, and serves a great narrative, but she's not there functionally all that often.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think she's a Navi-type character, though, because she has to fill in and kind of like put words to all this stuff that Gordon might be feeling?
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I think she's a strong character, but again, she runs into a similar problem. And, you know, I think she has less utility than Navi because I'm more sympathetic to the argument that Brendan makes, because Navi is kind of the smart one of the duo. Like, she's always showing Link what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you're right. I don't think that Alex is a perfect sidekick, and in the way that we're, you know, nebulously trying to define what sidekick is. Yeah. But the fact that she is a strong character, that she lives independently of Gordon, makes her more of a sidekick to me than Navi, who I think is not independent of Link. I can't imagine what would she do in her free time, right? She functions specifically as this reminder for Link.
Yeah, I mean, she's basically, the game opens up by her kind of getting assigned to Link as, I mean, they're supposed to be companions, like lifelong companions.
The problem that I run into is that I do see someone like Cortana like a sidekick, even though she's essentially just Navi.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, even in the same exact way, I mean, she basically hides in Master Chief's hat the whole time, just like Navi hides in Link's hat.
Yeah, and even in Halo 3, she appears out of the blue and slows you down, and it's kind of annoying, you know?
Well, I mean, I think, unfortunately for her, she falls into just being a plot device more than any kind of thing that impacts the game. I mean, she's not really highlighting targets for you all that often. She's not really, you know, dropping ammo or anything. She's just kind of there to move the story along, or at least to justify how the story moves along.
Yeah, but she's also so important to, yeah, the narrative, as you said, what happens in the world, right? Like, they need her in order to win the war, in order to accomplish all sorts of tasks. So especially in Halo 3, when she's not with Master Chief, you kind of sort of feel her absence in a way that maybe, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't feel if Navi was suddenly gone.
I think even though they kind of have a similar suite of powers, Cortana is a lot different in that her importance was kind of built up around the game, not necessarily as much in the game.
Yeah.
Like, how powerful were those Halo 3 trailers when you realized that she was, you know, trying to urge you on? I mean, I felt that relationship stronger in the previews and trailers than I ever did in the actual game.
Yeah, when I first heard Cortana's voice in some of the ads, like, I got goosebumps. It was great.
Yeah, but then you hop into the game and you realize that it's much different from, you know, Master Chief is kind of a lone wolf in how he, you know, deals with the world.
Yeah, you know, but even in Halo Reach, and I know you haven't played it yet, but she's mentioned in Halo Reach, and I think I still felt the weight of what that means for the future of the narrative. Mm-hmm. And that might just be because I think Halo Reach functions really well within the lore of the universe, and it makes it more rich in retrospect. But I mean, I guess you're right. She's not really a sidekick. She's just this other person that you need to escort. But she's also... I also felt a much more intimate connection with her because I was playing as the Master Chief.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's worth something. I mean, that they were able to build up that sort of feeling, even though there's not a lot of mechanical weight behind it. One other thing that I was thinking about was, this is another first-person game, but functions a lot differently, but how about the Far Cry 2 buddy system?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. The problem is, you know, at some point in the game, you just start not caring about them anymore. You want you're fine with them dying, and it's a weird moment when you realize, like, okay, maybe they were my sidekick at first. Now, I don't give a shit. Now they're just another person in the madness.
I barely played enough of Far Cry 2 to really go through a lot of different buddies. But did you, as you were playing through it, did you try to stick with one and develop a sidekick style dynamic, or were you just kind of saying, or were you just kind of hiring whoever was in town at that point?
So the first time, yeah, I did. I wanted to set up this sort of sidekick dynamic. I wanted one other person to have my back in this crazy world. And when I failed to save them, there was a specific moment when they died, and I couldn't do anything about it. you know. That was like, okay, well, I've lost one. Now the rest, I can't replace them anymore, right? My one sidekick is gone. And then eventually I realized, like, well, no, even that sidekick wasn't really a person, right? I mean, to be a good sidekick, you need to have a sense of trust in them between player and character, and between the character in the game and the other sidekick person.
Were you trusting in them because... I don't know how to put this, like, because you thought they were always going to be there, or were you trusting in them because you thought the game would make them competent enough not to get caught out in the Serengeti without a rifle or something?
Yeah, that one, right? I figured the game was putting them in here. Yeah, I trusted them because I knew they would always come save me if I were to die, mm-hmm. because that's how they function within the game. And so when you realize that they're designed to put their life at risk every single time, and you have to spend your surrettes, you have to spend your precious life-saving implements to save them, you realize that, you know, you're replaceable, and I'm more powerful than you. I don't need you anymore.
It's like, do you think that was part of the game? Like, I mean, part of like the theme that the game was trying to get across?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at some point, you realize that what you do is far more important than what they do, mm-hmm. and they're out for their own selfish interest as well. So why bother? It'd be like if Batman was just like, screw it, I'm going to let Robin die because I don't need him. Have you seen my gravelly voice? This is great.
After Jason Todd bites the bullet, he just goes through a string of 10 Robins.
Exactly. Well, what would you think about the sidekicks that are not human at all? You know, ones like Yoshi or Aggro from Shadow of the Colossus, or the dog from Fable.
Yeah, I mean, I think out of those three, I felt closer to Aggro, because there's this, similar to what Brendan was talking about with Navi, I mean, it's just the two of you against everything in the world, basically. And to have someone, even, you know, a non-human, type character to accompany you, I think it helps create that bond, that you might not get if you had to listen to annoying dialogue snippets every 5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, Aggro silence is so refreshing compared to to Navi's. And it's actually interesting because he mentions Navi is there to provide that sense of connection in what is otherwise a fairly desolate and quiet world. Shadow of the Colossus doesn't have that problem. You know, it's quiet, it's desolate. And that silence makes a bond between those two better than Navi and Link could have ever achieved.
Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, pretty sad when you think that you've lost Aggro, because it's one of those things that you've been trained by examples like Navi to think that, you know, that is just a constant mechanic of the game that will always be there. It's a movement mechanic, and when in reality you can lose that, and it starts to feel much more like a character in retrospect.
Yeah, that's true. I think for a good long while, though, they do feel a little bit like extensions of yourself, in which case they start losing an aspect of their sidekickness. I mean, I think Aggro is fantastic. You know, the fact that you have to, press a button to hit his haunches to get him going and whatnot makes you feel like you're not just holding down a button as the horse, you're pressing the button as a rider of another character who's not you.
Yeah,
you know, in a
way, I like that a lot as well. It's not a car; it's an actual other living thing.
Yeah, as opposed to something like Jack and Dexter, for example, where you just control your sidekick. So it's not really,
which is weird because we're looping back around to Elika now.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess it's because she has so much, for me anyway, it was because she has so much dialogue, and because the story revolves around her so much, it kind of feels like a dual character rather than a tool to help you get across wide chasms or something.
Yeah, I agree. So would you say that Elika is your perfect sidekick?
I mean, I think it's one of the best ways that... I mean, it's hard because I think that she's important enough to kind of be more of a second character rather than just a sidekick. I like your Aggro example better, actually, because clearly Aggro wouldn't be able to take down a Colossus by himself. But he's in a much more supportive role.
You don't know that.
Maybe when he, you know, gives him a mean kick in the shins or something. Yeah. At that. But I like the Aggro example. It strikes me as similar to possibly the Fable 2 and Fable 3 example. The dogs.
Yeah, and the dogs again. The way that they're designed to kind of run in front of you and guess where you're going and go off and do their own thing separates them from you as a person, right? You're not controlling them. They're not necessarily following you the way that the dog from Fallout 3 will just kind of follow you around. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes them feel like their own character.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose in other games where normally there would be a second player, because really the best sidekick is just a second player.
I wanted to bring that up because there's the idea that I think we're getting more and more games where we actually have a sidekick style role where the abilities of the two players are not on, there's not parity between them.
I was just talking to someone about this recently, and I kind of have a problem with that. I don't generally like cooperative games unless there's a parity or there's a gap that's so far that, you know, you never expect parity. Something like Super Mario Galaxy 2, where you control the gold star.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of a sidekick in that way, and you're clearly not Mario. You cannot interact in the world in the same way. As opposed to something like, you know, you playing Dom and me playing Marcus in Gears of War. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is weird because, you know, whoever's playing Dom is not the main character of the story.
Right.
But, you know, by putting the controller in the hands of a human, you're basically putting them on the same skill level, like within the world of the game. You know, whereas the computer wouldn't be able to as intelligently navigate the battlefield, a human starts to take a little bit of the luster away from Marcus.
Yeah. Or the same could be said for Resident Evil 5. You know, when someone's playing as Shiva, you're clearly not the character who's been going through this entire zombie arc, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it then becomes more of a buddy cop movie rather than a...
That'd be a great buddy cop film, yes.
I was thinking about Deathspank. Deathspank has something that is like specifically a sidekick, which is Sparkles the Wizard, who helps out Deathspank, and Sparkles is clearly a second banana. I mean, he's a skinny little wizard guy who has attacks that can help Deathspank, but can never really can't really take down the huge enemies by himself. It's a classic sidekick style character because he helps out Deathspank a lot and can get him through some harsh situations since he has a curing spell that, you know, he has unlimited magic points on, but, you know, he can't really take down something by himself.
Yeah, I love Sparkles. I think it's a lot of fun playing as the second player in Deathspank.
And it makes it a little bit, it makes it a bit more strategic, you know, like in that way that Batman and Robin fight crime differently when they're working together as opposed to when they're working solo. It makes Deathspank a different experience because you approach a battle differently.
And even as Sparkles, or really any sort of sidekick that doesn't have parity in terms of interaction with the game, it's a lot less stressful. You know, I really enjoyed being the star in Super Mario Galaxy 2 because I didn't have to do all of the really difficult puzzles that my partner was doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there aren't very many games where the second player or the sidekick player can fail out or cause the duo to fail out.
Yeah.
I think the onus is always on the main character to either finish or to fail, which would be an interesting switch to pull. If you had to get both people through an encounter and you didn't have the same types of abilities.
Yeah. I mean, there are the circumstances in Gears when the two players split up and you could die independently and not be able to resurrect them. You know,
that's true.
And that kind of changes the sidekick dynamic in that situation, even as Dom, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because you can ruin everything.
Yeah, you can ruin everything, basically.
Marcus has to get a new Dom.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the other thing, is it could be fun to be the sidekick and a relief, but you're also, you know, you have the job of supporting the main character, and if you fail, you know, if I'm the star in Super Mario Galaxy and I don't stop the big boulder that's about to kill him or something, you know, that's on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting to play the sidekick. That'd be fun to have a single-player game where you're just the sidekick.
I wonder what would happen in the credits. Yeah. You'd be looking at someone, they'd be, you know, reaching for the golden chalice of eternity or saving the princess or blasting off into space, and you'd kind of be off to the side and the margins on the screen.
That'd be awesome. I mean, you know, what is her name? Alice from Inspector Gadget, the niece?
Oh, yeah.
That's basically her role.
You just can have your prize for finishing the game is just a smug sense of accomplishment.
Yep.
Well, I think with that, maybe we should wrap it up.
Yeah, I think that's good.
If folks want to write in with their thoughts, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
You can also leave your thoughts in the comment section to this podcast, as well as any of our posts. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. And again, the site is experiencepoints.net, so come on down.
All right. Friend. Until next time, dynamic duo.
So long.
See ya. Every time we listen.